My reading is a poem by Michael Ondaatje, who some of you may know. He wrote The English Patient, Skin of a Lion, a number of other books that have been made into movies and things like that, but he's also a poet. And this is called To a Sad Daughter. All night long, the hockey pictures gaze down at you, sleeping in your tracksuit. Belligerent goalies are your ideal. Threats of being traded, cuts and wounds, all this pleases you. Oh my God, you say at breakfast, reading the sports page over the Alpen as another player breaks his ankle or assaults a coach. When I thought of daughters, I wasn't expecting this, but I like this more. I like all your faults, even your purple moods, when you retreat from everyone to sit in bed under a quilt. And when I say like, I mean, of course, love, but that embarrasses you. You who feel superior to black and white movies, coaxed for hours to see Casablanca, though you were moved by Creature from the Black Lagoon. One day I'll come swimming beside your ship, or someone will, and if you hear the siren, listen to it. For if you close your ears, only nothing happens. You will never change. I don't care if you risk your life to angry goalies, creatures with webbed feet. You can enter their caves and castles, their glass laboratories. Just don't be fooled by anyone but yourself. This is the first lecture I've given you. You're sweet 16, you said. I'd rather be your closest friend than your father. I'm not good at advice. You know that, but ride the ceremonies until they grow dark. Sometimes you are so busy discovering your friends, I ache with loss. But that is greed. And sometimes I've gone into my purple world and lost you. One afternoon, I stepped into your room. You were sitting at the desk where I now write this. Forsythia outside the window and sun spilled over you. Like a thick yellow miracle, as if another planet was coaxing you out of the house. All those possible worlds, and you, meanwhile, busy with mathematics. I cannot look at Forsythia now without loss or joy for you. You step delicately into the wild world, and your real search will be the frantic search. And your real prize will be the frantic search. Want everything. If you break going out, not in. How you live your life, I don't care, but I'll sell my arms for you, hold your secrets forever. If I speak of death, which you fear now greatly, it is without answers, except that each one we know is in our blood. Don't recall graves. Memory is permanent. Remember the afternoon's yellow suburban annunciation. Your goalie, in his frightening mask, dreams, perhaps, of gentleness. You're going to be listening to me talk for a little while here, so bear with me. Monday is Memorial Day. I was originally going to ignore this, gloss over it. I picked a ready-made sermon from the Church of the Larger Fellowship called Practice Random Acts of Kindness and Senseless Acts of Beauty by the Reverend S. Gilbert. It's a nice sermon and a good counterpoint to the violence that's present in our society. But you're not going to hear it today. Instead, I have just taken these words from it. Reverend Gilbert writes, "On my good days, before I judge another as wanting in virtue, I try a flight of imagination. What must it be like to live inside his or her skin? What is the human history of this person I am so ready to condemn? What experiences have prompted the target of my scorn to behave in ways I judge to be so very wrong? In my wiser moments, I know I cannot enter into the feelings of another, nor bear with them the burden of their pain. But by trying, I enter into the fellowship of those who bear the mark of pain. Compassion is from the Latin compatior, to suffer with, to share solidarity with. Reverence for life, the core of my ethic, begins when I experience myself as a being who feels both pain and pleasure. Since others seem much like myself, likewise feeling pleasure and pain, I identify with them." Now hold that thought. In fact, I'm going to ask you to hold a variety of thoughts as we proceed. You can think of me today as a juggler, tossing a series of items into the air and hopefully catching them. Monday is Memorial Day. I mention this again because we forget things so quickly, and I forgot to tell you to remember this. And you, like me, may have reasons to not like or care about Memorial Day. I took the time to enumerate my reasons. Number one, consumerism. I know it's Memorial Day because there are Memorial Day sales. It seems rather ironic that we would use the memory of the death of people in the military to sell things. And yet we do. War has been a huge boost to our economy. Department of Defense spending in fiscal 2010 is up, as it has been year after year, to $664 billion, continuing to be larger than either Social Security or Medicare spending. And despite all the Memorial Day sales, Nerf guns are still full price at Toys R Us. Number two, patriotism, militarism. American flags are no doubt on sale this weekend, and there will be those who wrap themselves in a flag to hide or justify their dislike of those things non-American and to make political divisions. I distrust a strong outpouring of patriotism because of its past abuses. Senator Joseph McCarthy looms large in the recent past, particularly here in Wisconsin, as does Richard Nixon. We are perhaps too easily led, too easily fooled by jingoism, by fear. Number three, redundancy. How different is Memorial Day from Veterans Day or from the 4th of July? It seems to me we have a lot of days commemorating militarism and war. Where are our days about peace? Number four, death. Underneath any other trappings, this day is about people who have died while members of the military, people who have died fighting, people who died killing other people. As a pacifist, what can you say about this sadness? Can you thank someone for what you believe was a wrong action that was taken on your behalf? Are there justified wars and therefore justified deaths? And out of this murderous work, the death of heroes who we now honor? Stop there and hold those thoughts. Whether you agree or disagree, just hold them there for a moment. This is about juggling. I've tossed these into the air. They are my initial thoughts and feelings, unvarnished for the most part. And they bother me. They are ungracious. They lack compassion. Ah, yes, there's that word again, compassion. We're going to toss it back up into the air again for now. Monday is Memorial Day. You may have forgotten this because I was so busy indicating why Memorial Day can be ignored, why you should enjoy it as just another long weekend, that extra day off. But here it is back again. I looked up the history of Memorial Day on the internet and found Memorial Day was first enacted after the American Civil War to honor Union soldiers. It is celebrated near the day of reunification after the Civil War. It was later expanded to honor veterans of all U.S. wars. I found this interesting for two reasons. First, why wasn't Memorial Day older? I would have thought that Memorial Day would have existed earlier. After all, the U.S. was founded with the Revolutionary War. This was followed by the War of 1812, by the Mexican-American War. And all of these would have resulted in a large number of casualties. Shouldn't we remember them? Second, why was it associated with Reunification Day? Perhaps historically, when we remember war, what we focus on is the reason for the war. The Revolutionary War had a specific task of freeing the colonies from England. Thus, the memorial of that war is the 4th of July, which focuses on the Declaration of Independence and freedom. The Civil War had a reason of reunification of the states. However, the end of the fighting was not the end of the task of reunification. That would take many more years. It is easy to suppose that when Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address, he was not just attempting to rouse people to continue fighting a war that was brutally wearing them out, but he was already looking ahead to when the fighting ceased and to the work necessary to heal the wounds of the fighting. Listen to his words again. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. Over time, the great task remaining before us changes from finishing the war to reunification, to abolishing slavery and promoting civil rights, to remembering to work to heal the wounds. Memorial Day, as it came to be called, shifts the focus from the dead to the living and their memories of those dead. Why do we remember the dead? Why should we remember them? Because the living need to look at the past to figure out the future that they want. When Matt Wilson, a professor of neurobiology at MIT's Institute for Learning and Memory, was asked, "Why do we remember unpleasant events better than ordinary ones?" he answered, "We think of memory as a record of our experience, but the idea is not just to store information. It's to store relevant information. The idea is to use our experience to guide future behavior." There's been a lot of really interesting research that points to a connection between our memory of the past and our ability to imagine the future. In terms of brain activity, anticipating the future and remembering the past seem to be related. The speculation is that we process memory in order to solve problems, and things we should learn from, things that are particularly important or that have strong emotions tied to them, may be things that are going to be important in the future. So remembering is important, and remembering historically painful events is perhaps particularly important. How else do we avoid repeating the faults of the past? Let's toss that up into the air as well. Billy Joel in the song, "We Didn't Start the Fire," besides creating a hook that will be stuck in your head for some time to come, does an admirable job at stringing together people and events of recent history into a song that is really nothing more than a list. And it goes on and on. The refrain of this song is like this: "We didn't start the fire. It was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it." It's a catchy tune. And it's quite interesting to look up the lyrics and then track down the various references made in the song if you don't already know them. And I didn't know a large number of them. I picked this song because I wanted something that would remind us of our recent history, something that would jog the memory. However, after listening to the song a couple of times, I found two interesting things. First, the list doesn't focus on wars, as Memorial Day does. It covers people. For instance, Joe DiMaggio and Malcolm X are mentioned. Things, such as television and the H-bomb. Literature and songs, Catcher in the Rye, Rock Around the Clock are mentioned. And historical events, such as the assassination of JFK. Second, the chorus confuses me. What does it mean, "We didn't start the fire"? On the one hand, focusing on the "we didn't," it's a statement of denial, as if we are accused of being the root cause of something bad burning through history, as if there's a weaving line of lit gunpowder traveling through time, and we are on the receiving end of its effect, but someone else is to blame. On the other hand, focusing on the start, "we didn't start the fire," it's simply a statement of inheritance. No, we didn't start it, but here it is, burning. We are indeed on the receiving end of the effects of previous history. But more than that, we are actors in our own history. We live it. We are certainly tied to previous history and complicit with it. For example, a person who eats a hamburger is historically involved through a sequence of some events with the slaughter of a cow. Similarly, a person who manufactures a gun is historically involved through a sequence of events with how that gun is used. But if fire is this bad thing traveling through history, why aren't we able to extinguish it? Or more importantly, what are we doing to try and extinguish it? And why are those attempts failing? I don't know the answer, so throw that into the air too. I'm hoping that gravity has ceased to work and that everything will just stay floating. I've never served in the military. The draft ended in 1973, before I was anywhere near the age that the military would want me. I had to register, but that was all. No protesting, fleeing to Canada, no having to make a personal stand for my general avowal of pacifism. I do not have any immediate family members who are currently in the military. I have a brother who served in the Coast Guard. I have a brother-in-law who served in the Navy. Monday is Memorial Day. Comes drifting back down, and with it comes that word, compassion. I'm trying to think of any people I know in the military and coming up with only three, all who served in Desert Storm. I believe all three were pulled out of the National Guard. None were killed or injured. Oddly, I have perhaps a clearer picture of fictional characters and their services. There's Forrest Gump. There's Billy Pilgrim and Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five or The Children's Crusade. There's the old TV show, MASH. There's Ishmael and David Gutterson's Snow Falling on Cedars. And there's Yossarian from Joseph Heller's Catch-22. Yossarian in Catch-22 has a conversation that goes like this. "They're trying to kill me," Yossarian told him calmly. "No one's trying to kill you," Clevenger cried. "Then why are they shooting at me?" Yossarian asked. "They're shooting at everyone," Clevenger answered. "They're trying to kill everyone." "And what difference does that make?" In terms of being shot, there's little difference between being shot at as a specific person or simply as part of a group known as the enemy. War is a great depersonalizer. One sends troops, fights an enemy, captures strategic points on a map. But one does not remember the war. One remembers specific people and events. I think that Memorial Day is not about a category of people who died while serving in the U.S. military. The category is instead a placeholder for a list of specific individuals who served and died, each with his or her own experiences, his or her own reasons for why they served. The act of remembering is specific, just as the graves in Arlington National Cemetery are specific, just as the names on the Vietnam Memorial are specific. I can understand this. These are people. In my initial dislike of Memorial Day, I've tossed a huge number of people into a single group, a class, people who serve in the military. In faulting the class, I have faulted all members of the class without regard for the people that they actually are. If that person were my brother, a friend, a coworker, wouldn't I treat them differently? Even if they are not known to me on a one-by-one basis, shouldn't I treat them each as a special case? Compassion, as Reverend Gilbert notes, requires that I feel what another person feels, that I try and understand their motives and reasoning. People join the military for all kinds of reasons. For some, it is a job, perhaps one in which they bet they will never see an actual war. Others join out of duty, others for economic reasons, others have been drafted. Some join out of compassion for other people, to defend others, fight for their freedom. My initial thoughts and feelings are coming back down. The surrounding consumerism, patriotism, redundancy, the death that are all bound up in this idea of Memorial Day. I'm going to drop them so I can start over again one more time. Monday is Memorial Day. Why should you participate? Because memory is important. We need it to work toward a future. Because we must reconcile our often violent past with now and with a future that we want. Because we have compassion for all people. And what should we do? We must broaden this narrow view of the world that only remembers its own dead. Our cemeteries are only a partial picture. Each side in a war has one. Both the Confederates and the Union buried their dead. We need to cross borders, unify the world. We need to rethink what the military is and does, because it is one of the largest workforces in the world, and what it means to serve. Kennedy asked us to ask ourselves what we can do for our country, and we should continue to ask ourselves that question. How do I serve? The sermon that Reverend Gilbert wrote was about practicing random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty. I want to correct that statement. We need to work toward deliberate acts of kindness and purposeful acts of beauty. We need to open our imaginations to find new ways to look at things. If I may slightly change Michael Ondaatje's words to his sad daughter, they would say, "Don't recall graves. Memory is permanent. Remember the afternoon's yellow suburban annunciation. Your military and its frightening mask dreams perhaps of gentleness."